Day of Absolution by John Gardner. Copyright 2000 by John Gardner. This unabridged recording of the reading of Day of Absolution was published by arrangement with Scribner, an imprint of Simon & Schuster, Incorporated, and was produced in 2001 by Blackstone Audiobooks, Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audiobooks. This book is read by Frederick Davidson. This book is 351 pages long. Day of Absolution by John Gardner. Internationally acclaimed crime writer John Gardner returns with a magnificent new cutting-edge thriller in the grand espionage tradition for which he is famous. Charlie Gauntlet, a retired lawyer who was something dodgy for the Foreign Office, is recently married to the much younger Rebecca Bex Oleska, a detective sergeant in the London Metropolitan Police's anti-terrorist branch. Charlie has more or less come to terms with Bex's demanding and dangerous job, though it's hard for him to stay home when his young wife is on the front lines, especially when she's facing Alchemist. Who is Alchemist? Nobody seems to know, except that he's an unidentified hired assassin who strikes high-profile targets and demands a big payoff. If you have enough money and want somebody killed, even a head of state, he's your man. As Alchemist is described to Charlie, he's a wizard soldier who walks on water, goes invisible, turns himself inside out like a reversible coat. He has had police all over the globe hopping around for the last decade and a half. Now, Bex may be the one to find him, but will she survive the encounter? While Bex goes to Ireland, tracking a young woman lawyer who may lead her to Alchemist, Charlie takes a strange and perhaps perilous journey of his own. His unlikely guide is Britain's most infamous traitor, Kit Palfrey, who turns up on Charlie's doorstep with an intriguing tale of five ancient scrolls found in the bowels of Moscow's Lubyanka prison. Are the scrolls authentic? If so, they could provide a new explanation for the Christian faith. As Bex and her team converge to stop the assassination of a head of state in London, Charlie probes the mysteries of a remote monastery off the west coast of Scotland, where the sacred offices are not the only order of the day. With style, wit, and page-turning tension, John Gardner's Day of Absolution builds to an electrifying conclusion as it examines some of life's most eternal questions. John Gardner, one of the world's premier thriller writers, has published more than 40 novels, many of which have been bestsellers. Six novels feature Big Herbie Kruger, most recently Confessor and Maestro. Among Gardner's works are 16 books in the legendary James Bond series, including Win, Lose or Die and Never Send Flowers. A graduate of Cambridge University, who did his postgraduate work at Oxford, he lives in Hampshire, England. Before becoming an author of fiction in the early 1960s, John Gardner was variously a stage magician, a Royal Marine officer, a journalist, and for a short time a priest in the Church of England. "Probably the biggest mistake I ever made," he says. "I confused the desire to please my father with a vocation which I soon found I did not have." Educated in Berkshire and at St. John's College, Cambridge, he became a theatrical journalist in the late 1950s, chronicling the years when Sir Peter Hall was reorganising the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon, giving it a London base at the Aldwych, and forming the semi-permanent ensemble. Gardner also lectured in Shakespearean production in Canada and the United States. In the early 60s, he wrote a series of highly acclaimed comic novels, featuring a cowardly secret agent called Boise Oak, then moved on to more serious books. In the early 80s, however, he was invited by Ian Fleming's literary copyright holders to write a series of continuation James Bond novels, which proved to be so successful worldwide that instead of the contracted 3 books, he went on to publish some 14 titles. In all, Gardner has 42 novels to his credit, many of them bestsellers. His Maestro was a New York Times Book of the Year. Day of Absolution is his first book in 3 years, following a serious battle with cancer. Work in progress includes a dark and disturbing novel, Bottled Spider, set in the 1940s. John Gardner has variously made his home in the Republic of Ireland and spent 10 years living in the United States. Following the death of his wife in 1997, he has moved back to the United Kingdom. He now lives in Hampshire. He has 2 daughters and a son. The book bears a dedication. For Louisa and Annie, may they rest in peace and may light perpetual shine upon them. This is followed by an author's note. I made some notes for this book in the early 70s and eventually sold it in 1995 over a working breakfast at the Algonquin in New York to my editor, Suzanne Kirk. I expected to deliver the typescript in the following year. Alas, that did not happen, because out of the blue I was taken seriously ill and finally had some major surgery. This was followed, with almost Job-like horror, by a family tragedy that made writing exceptionally difficult for a while. However, finally back on course, I delivered the manuscript almost 4 years late. While I was writing it, the world turned and a large number of things changed. But Suzanne Kirk kept the faith and waited. I thank her more than I can say for her trust and patience. I also thank my agent, Lisa Moylett, who took me on when I was at a particularly low ebb, and saw me through with constant goodwill, bolstering me up with a wonderful lack of sentiment. John Gardner, Hampshire, UK, 2000. To the wronged, grant restitution. Save us, Lord, from destitution. Grant us all your absolution. A quote from Brother Francis of Shrivingfold, 16th century. An alternative De Profundis. Prologue. There were 5 scrolls, with around 12 feet of papyrus to each, the sheets sometimes stitched, sometimes glued together, then rolled onto hardwood drums, with carved shafts at each end, so that they looked like large bobbins. The exception was the very short one on which the covering letter had been written. We have no idea how they ended up where they did, but you can make any number of educated guesses. Some of the names are familiar from the text of the scrolls. Centurion Titus Romilius, the girl, Naomi, who dictated the diary, the dark-skinned Nubian girl, Azeb, the boy called Petros, who had been brought in by Romilius mainly to do the writing. From the text we know that Romilius was a friend of Pontius Pilate, the procurator of Palestine, governor of Judea, the man who sentenced Jesus to death. So Romilius was close to Pilate, and we know he was the target of an attempted coup. The murders, which were part of this conspiracy against Pilate, almost certainly took place sometime in the morning of the day on which Christians now celebrate Jesus' resurrection from the dead. The first Easter, a word borrowed from pagan times, but anchored firmly to the ancient Jewish festival of Passover, that memorable occasion when the people of Israel celebrated the way in which they were released from their bondage in Egypt, a day linked so inseparably to spring sacrifice and commemoration of rebirth that it may well have been the true time of the execution of Jesus. On the day after that momentous first day of the week, Romilius wrote the letter that appears on the shortest scroll. How did it all come about? Who knows the truth? Pilate was the one who said, "What is truth?" But you can make healthy stabs at the truth because, for the first time, there is a detailed contemporary report. If the murders were committed on the first Easter day, it is likely that the prostitute Naomi disappeared directly before those brutal acts. The dreadful stabbing and slashing of the girl, Azeb, and the boy Petros. It is also possible to guess at what else occurred. Romilius, now a marked man, fled for his life, leaving the city of Jerusalem with the scrolls wrapped in skins, watertight and safe. It is logical to think that he took this booty to some place he had already prepared. If so, it would be nice to think that he was never able to retrieve them, that once they were hidden, circumstances prevented the Roman officer from ever going back. Certainly the little sacred treasure trove must have lain out of sight for many centuries. From other evidence, we know those same scrolls were moved by a Russian Orthodox monk called Brother Peter, a biblical scholar, sent by the Patriarch of Moscow and all the Russias to study an archaeological dig that was taking place near Jerusalem. We can be sure that Brother Peter travelled back to his own country, somehow smuggling all five scrolls out of the Holy Land, just as we know they ended up in the Church of St. John the Warrior, round the corner from the Oktyabrskaya metro station in Moscow in the spring of 1920. In the summer of the same year, the scrolls were removed by the state organs, the precursor of what later became the KGB, during the first months of Stalin's terror, the show trials and executions, from which so many were not to be seen again, including the Soviet Union's best military leaders. It was a relatively long time before those incredibly important sheets of papyrus were to reappear. Important? Certainly. For they were finally revealed as the only contemporary account of the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. A diary of one who was there, close to the events. The first firm evidence that the whole thing really happened in the way described later in the Gospels. Or was it?